Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 142, featuring Ben Bancroft and Brett Fisher from Arc Media. Really, really nice guys that I met over at the D2 conference in Vienna. This is another one of those D2 conferences talks that I had. They did a great presentation that really applies to nearly every creative field, and that's really about understanding the customer and understanding their needs and how to work with it. And they approached it in two ways. When things go really, really well in terms of exactly how you plan it, how that can be a real benefit. And when things don't necessarily go as planned, how that can also be a benefit. It's a fascinating subject that I think a lot of us could learn in a lot of different ways. They have two different approaches and they presented two different ideas, and they did that in their talk at D2, and we talk about it also on the podcast. I thought it was really interesting, and I thought it applies to a lot of the different things that we do. They also talk a little bit about some of the work they do in yacht visualization, something that was very, very interesting to me, and how they sort of test new things and try new things without necessarily promising things that they don't know how to do. So they, again, try to keep things simple and only accomplish things that they're very sure they can do. So it's a very good business plan, I think, that honestly speaking, I think that Ben's got some really great ideas on making sure that he has a good sustainable business, and that's something that we all sort of need. I really liked talking to all the people we did at D2, and there was a lot of, I still have a few more podcasts that I have saved up from there. And I also have a whole bunch that I did at THU, so that is going to be great as well. I'm really excited about sharing some of those with you. I don't really have any other really big announcements this week, except that we're going to be showing a lot of different work coming up soon. So keep an eye out some announcements, some things that we can announce soon, and some things that we can announce later. But hopefully you guys are all enjoying, by the way, the 3.6 from Maya. I'd love to hear what you guys think about that. And also keep an eye out on the WikiHuman stuff. I've been working very hard to get Digital Mike out, and I am hoping that he will be out in the next month or two. All right, guys, thanks so much. Hopefully you enjoyed this podcast with Brett and Ben.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the chaos group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
It's funny that we were talking about that. Was it, they misspelled your name on the...
Yeah, they called me Brett Fisher with a C.
With a C, which is a very German...
The German way, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I've had a few people ask whether I have seen it before, when you call up somewhere and they ask for your name and that. But definitely no C.
Yeah,
I think it's just Fabio winding you up. Actually,
probably,
I think, in fairness, we took the mick out of him quite a lot. So,
right.
It's fair dues on the
payback. That was Jason, actually.
It was Jason.
It was Jason. Okay. Yeah, right. He came up and apologized afterwards.
You weren't that upset, were you?
No, it's all good. So listen, a couple of things I want to do.
Just a second.
Yeah,
go for it.
I want to actually first ask you guys to sort of talk about your presentation, because it was an interesting presentation you guys gave, right?
You like that, did you?
I did. It was great. I think the way that you presented, first of all, is that you guys presented as a pair. So and you guys kind of made it work as a comedy pair, which was also
yes, a comedy pair. We did intend to be a little bit humorous, but we didn't really know we were a comedy act.
We thought we might come across as the Chuckle Brothers or something.
Yeah, it was really good. But your main goal or the inspiration to your talk was to specifically address a question.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And it was a question, I guess. So you know, at D2, obviously they've been sending out questions to people.
They have, yeah.
And then you were given that question, say, here's the question we have, and that's what your presentation is going to be about,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Go away and think about it. How can you answer? And, you know, I think our first response to was that face, you know, of what the hell is
how
this?
How do you answer that?
You know, it's...
Well, first of all, let's mention what the question is.
How do you know when an image is ready to meet the client?
Right.
And, you know, it is such a broad question. I hope we didn't do it as succinctly as we'd like to have done, but we tried to demonstrate that it is so varied, but it is actually driven by a few factors mm-hmm. when you're starting the job. And that's the bit we were trying to
It's all about the clients. It's all about your clients are extremely different. It's all about how you work with them. The production process that you do with them is going to be different as different clients come along. Yeah, so the answer is always going to be different.
Yeah, you can't pigeonhole every client, every project into a lovely, nice production process that we would like.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, so you've got to accept that. And I think that's what we were trying to demonstrate in our presentation, was to say, look, hey, here's the end result. I think these two end results in terms of these still images are comparable in terms of their quality and in terms of what they do.
Right.
But
the process was
entirely different, but we still managed to get through that to the right end result.
In terms of the question, when do we know an image is client ready? They were extremely different for the two jobs.
We presented it. Essentially, your painted visuals, your concept images are exactly what the client got at the end of the day. Right. Whereas, and that client needed that. They needed that that input early on, because otherwise we'd have been wandering around, meandering through a period of time where the client couldn't answer the question. They couldn't answer the information requirements. They didn't have it. It wasn't there. So,
but what was also interesting is that you did have a skeleton of a process.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a base there to work from that you try and do, but that's right. Whether that works is like Ben says on the, is finding out that information up front.
Yeah. If we could do that process on every job,
mm-hmm.
I would love that commercially as a business owner, and also as somebody who produces commercial artwork, essentially,
mm-hmm.
that works because you've got a strategy, you've got boundaries to it, and you can not wander, meander off. I mean, artists are notorious for
going down the wrong path.
You know, and I still say we produce commercial artwork. That's what we do.
Right. I'm going to contradict Ben there slightly and say I disagree in terms of. I would love that to process to happen every time, because right. I really enjoyed the process on the other job, having to do those painted images and stuff and do the process differently.
Right.
For me, I found a lot more interesting.
But you're a proper artist.
I come from a very artistic background. I used to paint and draw and stuff. So doing that sort of process, I'm much sort of preferred than the very structured, rigid, very technical way of
production
doing
process. You don't like that,
I don't like that. You know, I freestyle.
I know, but you understand the advantage. You understand the value
absolutely,
of that. You
absolutely.
Know, and, you know, you still endure the pain of enjoy. You know, you actually enjoy it, but it is a pain to create the image and deal with the client in that manner, as opposed to dealing with it in that structured process.
Right,
but.
I think
that's exactly what we're trying to demonstrate, is that client that the interior design client, that's the way they work. Their product is like that.
Right.
It's very refined. It's very considered. So all of the information they provided was massively.
We're getting beer delivered, just so everyone knows what's going on.
Yeah, so that's massively considered.
Right.
Whereas the Marbella client, you know, totally different. Then you know, they don't live in design. They're a property developer. They sell stuff.
Right.
And they needed Brett's input. They needed the help. They needed Art Media's help to get to that point. So
what I was trying to say before is, though, I disagree. What I do agree in that there should always be some sort of process per job, but it doesn't always have to be the same. So as much as you said you'd love every job to be like that, it's great.
That's
but
a commercial.
But what it's about is refining that process. Yeah.
Hold on, before we go too far, I want to make sure that you know, some of the listeners who may be confused, who are not here, most of my listeners are from all over the world, and I've got about 30,000 listeners a week
to
listen to this. Okay. So I need to summarize what it was. So the question was, when do we know when things are done? And what you guys did is you guys split it up into two different projects, and each one of you were on this side of the stage, and you were presenting the different process and steps that you guys have through these two different projects.
Yeah.
And how one was fit a very clean structured process and the other one was just all over the place, right?
Yes, yeah.
So the process really involves a multi-step process. I think there was six stages, right? So you block it out, you start to detail, you start to involve lighting, start to involve material, you can refine production, boom, 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 and then your render's done, right?
Yeah.
And then the process, that process worked very well for this interior project. We had this beautiful kitchen,
yep.
that rendering that would look great, and as a lot of your work looked great. The other process was for a real estate company where like they couldn't understand the blocking, so you almost had to give them a version of the final image for them to even consider what was going on.
Yes. There was that also, and that none of that information that was available with the interior project was available with the developer client.
Right.
So they had a basic outline CAD, planning approval CAD,
right.
which is here's a box with some holes,
right.
and I want some nice images
Let's
to sell.
It look pretty.
Make it look pretty.
Yeah, but it was almost like build my buildings for me because they didn't even know that. The other one had extremely detailed interior process. Everything, all the materials were selected. Yeah. Everything was there.
Absolutely everything.
So you guys had to design this. The other one, right?
Yes.
Well, we helped him along. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what we had to do, which is why we took it to that sort of stage four that we called it, was at that point then he could kind of start to see at that point what parts did and didn't work for him.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't have been able to see that.
He didn't know what questions to ask unless he had a visual to look at. So he could look at your first visual.
Is the pool the right size? Yeah. I don't know. I need to see it
right.
a lot later down the line to be able to make that decision. So we knew straight away that we were going to have to do a completely different process.
Right. Well, I think that's an interesting philosophy about how to approach clients. I mean, I used to work in feature films as well. So I already know that there's certain customers or directors who just can't make any approval without seeing something close to final.
Right.
And so, which is a pain because then it's like,
If it doesn't like it, you...
Because once you get the animation, like changing the animation where you're way down the truss is very expensive because you have to redo everything, right? So you're trying to get these different stages approved as long as you go. Then there was another thing that was very difficult. And this, I actually didn't work on this film, but it was friends of mine who were working with Clint Eastwood on Flags of Our Fathers. And the problem is with Eastwood, who's so... just get the stuff done. Like he's Mr. First Take is approved. Right. And cause he's very, very, very efficient.
Yep.
And they were showing him like an early comp. That's like, it wasn't even close to final. Right. But they're like, you just want to show you the progress of this and how it's going. And goes great. Final. And it's like, no. It's like, it's not, there's a lot of mistakes in here. And he's like, no, it looks great. What are you talking about? Let's move on. Yeah. Let's keep going. And so it's like, no, we at least have to add film grain back to this. So it was, but you do it like all the different customers are different. You have to read into them and see how that process goes. But it's interesting that you said that because the project that you said you really enjoyed was that project that most people would say, what a nightmare. This client can't make a decision without anything. Right.
Just going back to that, what I did, from the start was with his block model and that, that we got, I actually got some reference images and I just painted very loosely, very, very quickly, 20 minutes in Photoshop, just painted the kind of mood and atmosphere and trying to build that almost to kind of show in the,
and you collated some nice reference of and that was in some respects that was your creative process. You'd said, I know what Chris wants in this school and he doesn't know, but I think I can show him, so we can do it.
For me, I almost prefer the coming from an artistic background, I almost prefer those original images. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a bit of a borderline because you might get a client and then go, actually don't go any further. That's all I need. They're great.
Truth, there was a point where he may well have accepted those first painted images that you did.
Yes.
Right.
He looked at that and was like, that's it. I buy this.
Right.
We weren't doing these images to sell detail of doors stuff like that.
It's an idea. It's a lifestyle. But our work, Art Media's work is very, photorealistic. It's very refined. We like working, hence why we like working with the interior designers who do that sort of stuff. So it fits with what our end product is. So the end product that Brett produced is no different.
Sure.
But he very much enjoyed that looser artistic approach. And probably that client would have put them in their brochure as it were, the painted shot, because he introduced, as we were trying to demonstrate straight away, there's a conversation, a brief, and Brett went away, spent a short amount of time, basic model, bang, that's got across exactly what I wanted. Yet we still had to go through weeks and weeks of production and helping them design the building.
Right.
Because they could see it then with the model that we'd done. But actually, the end CGI, whilst it's very photographic and detailed, mm-hmm. still says the same thing that the painted job did that he did in 20 minutes.
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah. Up to a point.
Very, very loose images. Yeah.
But I think that there is an interesting idea, and this is another thing that comes up a lot in the architecture visualization companies out there, especially the really good ones like you guys, is that you are often approached by real estate companies to do these images, not necessarily architects, right? And the real estate companies are, or whoever happens to be, are approaching you with a without necessarily all the architecture designed, right?
Yeah.
So you are often in the responsibility of
being architects to a degree,
architects, or at least finishing the architecture in some cases, right? Yeah. So how has that affected you? Going to obviously, do you guys have an architecture background or an architecture route to start with? No, right?
No, but working in Synergy quite a lot, you start to understand what does and doesn't work after a while. And the same, we also do the same with things like interior design,
right?
We get clients come to us with no interior design. They don't know what they want. They think
you get a floor plan.
They get a floor plan. They think CGI. Just for a few things. So we've actually started.
Started offering interior design as an add-on service that we can provide. I mean, because what we realized is that we're actually doing that. We were doing an interior design mm-hmm. element, and it's a learned skill set in terms of from experience. It's like we know what's going on in the industry. We know what is interesting, and whilst we are an ArcVis company. We are interested in design. Mm-hmm. And we like interiors. We like architecture. We like all that stuff. You know, mm-hmm. we're aware of what's going on. So we understand some of the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. We may not be rebirth. You know, we may not have a skill, and we may not have a defined qualification. Mm-hmm. But we do understand the principles. So we are filling in that gap. And you're right. You know, our business has moved from what it was 10 years ago. Our services were to architects.
Right.
And probably now I'd say only 10% of our work is for architects.
Right.
90% is for marketeers or, you know, interiors or real estate companies.
If a client comes and asks for your advice and ideas on the architecture and interior design, for me, that's great.
Right.
You know, they really appreciate you and they understand.
That's the point I'm making. It's like they trust you.
They trust you.
You talked about briefly. Let's go back, since I think some people would like to know more about your company. How long has the company been around, you said?
We are 15 years old this week.
Oh, congratulations.
So, yes.
15.
Yeah, we're 15
Happy
years old.
Happy birthday.
15 years old. Okay, so which is really great. And obviously, how did... I do also remember your story.
Okay.
Which is a pretty funny story about... what was your philosophy?
Under promise and over deliver.
Right. Because then people are happily surprised, right?
Well,
and you have a story at the beginning of your career which was the opposite.
Yes, I think that's what I wanted to put in our presentation, was to demonstrate this is where the idea of this comes from, is that, that with a lot of bravado and a lot, you know, there's commercially it makes it difficult. If you promise the world to people, you know, you're making your life very, very difficult to begin with.
Right.
And I did that in that experience. I was young, I was straight out of university and I was full of bravado. I was like, yeah. Cool. We can do this. We can be the next Industrial Light Magic. It's a piece of cake, you know.
Right.
Obviously, that doesn't happen. But you know, when you're 18 and invincible, it's You just think that's the way you do it. So that's the way I approached it. I was like, I have no responsibilities. I have no mortgage to pay. Let's go and do it.
Right.
So when I got to the point of going to that to get an inquiry for that job, it was like, yeah, sure, we can do it.
Right.
Let's say you can do it and challenge yourself to make it happen.
You know, that's interesting you said that, because what you basically said is what in the visual effects world is that that's what happens on every movie. Absolutely. Yeah. It's like we have no idea how we're going to do anything, and we end up like either. And why do you think so many visual effects companies go out of business?
Well, that's. I think from a personal point of view, in terms of, I like commerce, I like business. I mean, you know, Brett's a true artist,
yep.
and I'm a half decent artist. I know what looks good, but I've got nowhere near. I've got nowhere near the innate talent that Brett has.
Right,
and so I know what.
Which
looks
is why
good,
he's your creative director.
Yeah, that's why it's my creative director. Exactly. That's why I'm the managing director. Right, yeah. And I think that's where it changed at that point. We did that movie. We made that, and it was a horrible experience. And what I realized that I don't like that VFX process, which is you start everything as an R&D project.
Right.
Whilst you learn something, it's really rubbish as a commercially for earning a living.
Right.
Because what I was finding was that all the jobs that were like that, which were an R&D, were, as you said, why do loads of VFX firms go bust, is that it always requires a hell of a lot more time. And I was finding that the jobs that where I knew what our skill set was could plug into straight away,
right,
I could make some money on.
Right, right, right.
But I would do the creative stuff. It was always a problem. It was always going to take twice as long, be twice the budget.
Right.
And at the end of it, we've expended a hell of a lot of time and effort. And yep. We're looking at going, that's a closet project.
Right.
Because I'm not happy with it. Whereas the ArcViz world, I was like, I know what I'm doing with this. I know about architecture, I know about interior design. I'm interested in that. It's part of my DNA. My dad is a planning consultant, and he's not a Reba architect, but he's done buildings. So I've grown up on building sites,
right.
So I know architecture. And at some point I went, we're stopping doing this.
Right.
You know, we're doing ArcViz. This is what we're good at, or what I'm good at and what I know.
Right.
So I basically put a stop on it.
Well, I think ArcViz has a well-established language at this point. There's a lot of things that are going on that are interesting, and you're able to capitalize it, and you do fantastic work. You also done things interesting. We want to get to the yacht stuff that you guys are doing, because those are really interesting, and obviously clients, customers for a very long, long time.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. In the visual effects world, that the problem with it is on a movie, especially in a big visual effects movie, everything starts with, we want to see something we've never seen before.
Okay.
Right? So by definition, it's going to be that way. So there's almost no choice, right? And so everyone is going to suffer through that. Now, one of the things, I don't know, it's just hard. But I think you're right. He's like, you can really, that's another thing that I think is great about what you're doing is like, yeah, we can do this, and then you surprise them and blow them away with something that's even better.
Yeah.
Right.
Give yourself, what I was trying to get across yesterday was to give yourself the chance, or give yourself a little bit of leeway. Don't go in there and say, I'm going to deliver this, because, you know, you can analyze those three items that I was trying to get, the client themselves, the brief, what it is, what they want, and the time scale or the budget, you know, they kind of sit together. You can look at that, and it gives you an overview of what the job might be like, and that's what I was trying to demonstrate, was that we could deal with both of those. And you need to, but you still need to look at that before you start, and that's what I like about ArcViz, and I like about, I know this industry, so I can look at those things and say, Brett, this one's going to be a pain, but he likes that, it's cool, you know, you're gonna have to add that input early doors,
right?
But this one is going to be dead straightforward. This is, you know, we've worked with them before. We understand them,
right.
But you know, as I said yesterday, the client for Brett's project, the Marbella job, it took him one job, and the next job he was dropped straight into the process.
Right.
Yeah. Completely.
Because he knew, because he was educated after one job.
Right.
He realized what he could get. And once he was engaged and interested, he's like, all right, I've got to give you the information, Lily. What you're doing is you are visualizing. I mean, that's what, in most cases with interiors or high-end stuff, you are visualizing somebody else's design.
Right.
Now, it's great fun doing the design,
but
most of the time we're employed for doing very high-end visualizations of somebody else's design.
Right.
And that's what people forget. They want to see, people ring us up and say, I want you to do me an image like that. I said, are you going to pay for the interior designer who's done that? And they charge like 40 grand to even have a meeting.
Right.
But they've done a lot of work for us to visualize that.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I used to get called and like, I want a commercial just like this. I'm like, but they paid for the design. They paid for that commercial. I'm not just going to give you a clone of that. So,
give them the same one and change the name.
So we're in like, so you want to throw that in, that 40 grand fee for that consult into our image price.
Right.
Well, we'll do what we can, but. You know, somebody else has gone through a year-long process to get that refined interior specification done, and you want us to do it in like a morning.
Right. But you, what you also did is, and this is something that I think I want to do, like you said, that client came back, right?
Yes.
That client came back. And so based on that painful process, whether painful or not painful or enjoyable, as you'd like to do it.
Some parts of it was enjoyable.
A little masochistic of you. Yeah. But what I think is interesting about it is that process allowed you to develop a language with this client,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
And so once you develop that language with that client, you can now... have as a managing director, you have now what's called a repeat client, right?
Yes,
a repeat business, and therefore that is a win in the end. So it does overall benefit you.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. And I think perhaps I didn't articulate that very well yesterday. Was that,
no, you did.
I did. That's fine. I wanted to show that you have to be flexible. You have to be flexible. You know, we're doing commercial artwork, and we get paid very well for drawing pictures with 3ds Max and V-Ray. It's you know, if you actually look at what we do in the business and what we, you know, it's not really that important. You know, we're selling property.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of what's going on in the world, it's tiny,
right? But
that's where our talent is. That's what our skill set is. We're good at that, and we want people to, we don't want to push people away by saying, hey, this is the process that we do. If you don't fit into that, we don't want to do business with you.
Right. No, it's not fair.
What I wanted to demonstrate was, look, hey, we can deal with everybody, but actually after a bit of education, they come on board and they start to understand why we have that process.
Right.
And they find that the clients get more out of it if they follow that process, because it reduces the changes, it reduces the problems from our perspective, but also it makes them make the decisions that they need to make. I mean, that client hadn't made any decisions, had he? You know, he hadn't chosen what materials were going to go on the exterior of the building. It was like, this is a box in CAD. It's like four lines.
Right.
And it's like, all of what you see on that sketch that Brett did is a vision.
Right.
So what he realized is that I now know I brought that to you far too early.
Right.
For him. We helped him fill it in. So the next set of images were like, I want that specific Ferrari in. I want that specific artwork. He'd gone away. So before he called,
he'd gone and done the research.
Yeah.
And he had the information.
And you understand why that decision was important.
Why were we asking for that? Why were we saying, Chris, you know, send me the stuff. He's like, just draw something. It's like,
doesn't
work that way.
Yeah.
He came round and into the process after one project.
Right.
After one experience, so, which was great.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, now if you don't mind, I'm going to skip to another repeat client you guys have had, and that's obviously the Princess, right?
Yep. Yeah. Princess Yachts. Yeah.
So this is a yacht company, I'm assuming, a very high-end yachts, right?
Yep.
And so what are some of the visualization that you guys do for these guys? I mean, when did that relationship start, and how did that develop?
That the initial project was back in 2005, I think, was our first, and that was a three-way pitch. Okay. So we were introduced.
So like 11 years ago.
Yeah, it's a good while ago.
So it was a competition in some kind. Yeah,
basically, they had a creative agency who were looking after all their branding and their printed materials and all their marketing stuff, so the website.
Mm-hmm.
And they just found us online. They'd seen our work and went, I think these guys could possibly do what you want. And and ultimately, they had an issue that they needed to solve.
Okay.
Which was that every year, the key boat shows that they presented their new products at were at a certain time of the year. And every time they did it, they weren't quite finished. You were literally finishing these new yachts the day before. So they couldn't photograph them.
Right.
So simply, we were asked to be virtual photographers. So so you could take that process back 6 months. We've designed the boat. We've not built it.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to print some brochures. And these brochures took months to print because they were lovely, hard-backed, you know, hand sort of sewn. So, you know, beautiful pieces of tactile marketing material.
Right.
And they couldn't photograph it, but they wanted to launch it. So they spoke to us and they asked their creative agency, say, we need somebody to do some CGI.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a phone call. We literally just got a phone call. We'd like you to do an image. And I don't like free pitching at all. In fact, it's probably the last time I've ever done any free pitching. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I'm quite interested in this.
Right.
I quite like, you know, it's quite prestigious. Mm-hmm. I'd like the work. So both Chris and I were, let's do it.
Okay.
So my business partner, Chris, mm-hmm. who looked at it, was like, I'll crack on and do a job. So we did a test piece, mm-hmm. It was just a random, let's just make up a room. Let's design a room mm-hmm. or a space and show what we can do in terms of realism and, you know, photographic quality. So mm-hmm. we did it. Chris grafted, did it. And then we went down and they were like, you've won the job.
Awesome.
Get on with it. It was like, fantastic. So we did that. And that's not changed at all in 11 or 12 years that we've been doing it. It's like they still have that same issue.
So you
issue.
Have boat show season.
Yep. Yeah. Every year they launch maybe 2, 3, or 4 new products.
Right.
In fact, they're launching, and every now and again, it's like a bigger step change. I think they had some investment from Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy at some point. So mm-hmm. that kind of took them from being a smaller outfit and that drove their marketing a bit more. So they're looking to push and do a bit more. So that's kind of why we showed the Phoenix work that we've been doing is because right. we've always been restricted in that we've always comped CGI into photography.
Right. Because you've made the wakes and as photographs. Right.
Yeah. So, that started out initially, it was easier, but mm-hmm. equally it sat in with their branding and their photography so that when we comped the CGI and it matched in with all the other photographs in the brochures that we were doing. So mm-hmm. that sat nice and it worked well.
Right.
But as you can imagine, that's quite restrictive in terms of composition. What you do is basically right. you're saying, I can put your new boat in the same photograph you've got of your old boat.
Right.
Yeah. You know, they've got lots of photographs, but it's still limiting in terms of creativity and in terms of, you know, what you could offer them.
So, you wanted to make your own wakes, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's something that we've been thinking about.
You saw the demo that we'd been working on.
Yeah, I did see the demo. I love the fact that you guys are using Phoenix, obviously.
Yeah.
but I think that it's really cool that you guys are doing it and it was a simple enough tool and able to do what you have. They haven't necessarily, I know that you guys gave us a sneak peek. They haven't necessarily seen some of these animations.
No, they've not seen it yet.
You've actually seen it.
This is the first time we've shown it.
Which is amazing. But I would be very curious to find out once they see that, if they start to look at you guys and go, huh, maybe we should do some video content with you.
Well, yeah. This is it. I mean, we have done video content before.
Right.
But the boat's been not moving. It's been about the interiors. So it's been, which essentially is exactly the same as an Art Viz interior, but smaller.
Yeah.
So the principles are exactly the same. And I think that's what we would like to do now that we've actually had a bit of time to experiment with Phoenix mm-hmm. and say, we can provide a convincing version of that boat moving,
yep.
which we couldn't do before. It means that we've got no problems with composition anymore. It's like, if they want to see it from whatever position,
mm-hmm.
we can do that, which we've not been able to do for 11 years.
Right.
So actually from our perspective, it makes it massively more viable to respond to the client's requirements.
Yep.
But also it's going to give them the opportunity to commission, as you say, different work.
Right.
You know, if we can show, you know, they've not seen that yet. I hope that when they see it, they will go, wow,
right.
we can do this. And that opens up the conversation of, here's lots more work to do. Here's lots more interesting things we can do. Great.
Right.
But we don't know yet. So we want to refine what we showed yesterday and present that to them and then give them the opportunity to think about. I know they've got a launch of some new products coming up this next year, which are big. So it's the perfect time to give them a bit of food for thought in terms of their marketing options.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting. I actually saw some really beautiful wakes that were done, and I don't know if you guys even noticed, but it was done for Game of Thrones, right?
Right, I don't watch it. So
those wakes behind the big boats, are actually done
they're
in Phoenix.
They're all beautiful, are they?
Okay. Right. Yeah, if you're in Phoenix. Yeah. So, yeah. And one of the big inspirations and the things that really convince people to do it is specifically because of the bubbles and all the other stuff that happens.
Yeah, the results that we've been getting over the last few weeks have been, I mean, we've been still going...
Marcin, who has been working on it, has spent probably what, 3 or 4 weeks? Zero interaction with Phoenix.
Never used it before.
And said, right, can we make this work?
Mm-hmm.
So he spent 4 weeks, right. 3 or 4 weeks, and I'm quite pleased where we've got to. And if after 3 or 4 weeks we can deliver that,
mm-hmm.
I imagine if we can spend 12 months, you know, a bit of experience, do some more jobs, then wow.
No.
You know, it's not, convincing isn't the word, it's fantastic. I mean, it's where we were dealing with Princess 12 years ago, talking about, we can visualize your boat in the water, we need a photograph.
Right.
I didn't think it would be 11 years before we could do it in CGI, but that was, as I say, that seems like a feature film stuff. That seems like I need to to go and blow a budget, but actually we're...
But you see, this is the thing, right? Let's go back to your initial philosophy where you... under promise and over deliver. Now you are basically making sure that what you deliver, you can, right? Yes. So you're validating your delivery.
Yeah, we're doing the work beforehand. So I said, hey, we can wow them, but I know we can do
it. So if you're going to make them a really big promise, you know you can do it.
Yes.
Yeah. And you can actually go there with proof.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, so, you know, if we'd have gone into that, and that's why I've never promised to do it before.
Right.
Because it's saying, this is how we work, this is what we can do.
Right.
Your pricing level, the time frame required is limited. So I've not got time to be doing, you know, beautiful wakes in the sea, mm-hmm. with loads of particles and this sort of stuff. I'm thinking, I can't spend 6 months for a still image just to get it from that angle. Now, we spent 4 weeks with Phoenix.
Right.
And now we think, well, we know exactly what it, we can do that. We can do that. And so when we're doing an image in a week, we can drop the boat in, run the, you know, the same principles. Here's the image.
Yeah.
Great. You know, I don't need to, I can still under promise and over deliver.
Yeah. No, it was a really cool thing to see. And I love seeing it. I love seeing things where things are used. I mean, we do a fluid simulator, if you just generally think, say, fluid simulation, you don't think ArcVis, right? No. Right? And which is fine, because what you guys have already done is you've taken ArcVis and you've, you know, adapted it to work for yacht design, which is kind of cool. It's, and there's like...
It isn't that much different.
No, you know? it's not. And that's the thing that's awesome.
The exterior element is different. And they're very specific, you know, in terms of like where the wake breaks on the bow of the yacht is really, really important to them. So it has to be right.
Well,
but actually, the simulations we're doing are, you know, they're excellent, and that's after a couple of weeks
of testing. Based on physics,
yes. So you get exactly, you know, this isn't a creative thing. This is a physical thing that's happening. So, so when they do that, when we go back to them and go, you know, so when we photoshopped it previously, it's like, oh, that's too low in the water, that's too high in the water because the break. That question is not going to be asked anymore. It's like, it's correct. That's physics. It's happening.
Right.
Which is great.
So it's really interesting that you guys are doing that. Let's see. I kind of want to break a little bit, and hopefully you guys are cool. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. obviously, as you guys know, you were here yesterday, and we had an announcement that we made yesterday.
Yeah.
And I'm curious. We've had a lot of discussions internally about how people feel or what it means to the industry. But I'm actually curious about what you guys think, and don't be shy to be honest about it, what you guys think about the announcement and how, what kind of questions is it raised for you guys and so forth.
It solved the question in one easy step.
Okay.
Mm. I mean, we actually, we only started using Corona. We're a bit late to the party, I think, but we started using
about
Corona. Myself and Chris decided to give it a go, and we were really happy with the results and
We actually took one of the yacht projects, didn't you? And Chris did a test image of one. So we took a scene that we'd been doing in V-Ray,
mm-hmm.
took it straight into Corona,
right,
and said let's do the same image and let's give them a comparison.
Uh-huh.
But in some way, after using V-Ray for so long, you do kind of feel a bit like you were cheating or something.
What we're doing here?
Is this right?
Absolutely, we did. Yeah, we love you guys, and we think that, you know, in terms of value for money, in terms of a product, you know, it's fantastic. It's allowed us to do, you know, you could see in our Princess work, it went from being good. And then when V-Ray came on board, it was a step change in terms of the products, in terms of realism and the lighting.
Right.
And so we, you know, we worked with it for 10 years and then, you know, we'd seen some guys doing some Corona stuff and we were like, that's looking good. Mm-hmm. That's looking really nice. We've got to have a look at it. And so I've been saying for a while, as soon as we get a bit of a break, I need you to have a look at it. I need you guys to have a look at it and see what you think. And we trialed Corona and we were like, yes, it's good. Mm-hmm. It's simple. It's lighting.
Well, for me as an artist, there are great things in Corona, but there are great things in V-Ray. So how can it not be a good thing to put them together?
Right.
It makes sense for you guys to join forces and do that for me.
But we're not necessarily putting together. We're borrowing from each other.
Yeah. Right, okay. But we're borrowing from each other. Like you said, the image sampler that you...
Right.
So in terms of answering your question, we were thinking, well, we do a lot of interiors.
Mm-hmm.
And Corona works really well for that. But we're like, well, is this going to be a case of we go to Corona for interiors, but we stick with... V-Ray for the exteriors, for doing the yachts and doing the water simulations and that sort of stuff. Like, so we start splitting the pipeline.
Mm-hmm. It's the fact that you're borrowing the best bits from each other.
Right.
So when you announce that, you're like, hey, we don't need to feel bad. This is great. You know, they're going to join forces and we can borrow the two. So,
So for you guys, it didn't really affect you guys, right? It's not necessarily a thing. But what do you think some of the user base, because obviously we've had a lot of mixed reviews and some people are misinterpreting. Yeah, I think people are misinterpreting it in some way. They're thinking that we're going to kill off a product or kill the other product. There's no reason for us to do that.
No.
I think that they're both good products and they serve different things. Okay, you brought up a good point. I used to be involved in a lot of, let's just call them, render showdowns in visual effects and they're horrible and painful, and no matter what happens in the result, it's always the worst decision or it's always a decision that's based on politics, not actual logic, right? Always. So no matter what people do, it's always a political decision when they're pitting renderers against each other. And what's interesting is that rendering is, especially in ray tracing, rendering is a mathematical process that adds, you know, the colors of rays together, right? And everything to add it up together. And that math is going to be the same. Basically, you can think of them as calculators. If you think of rendering engines as calculators, if you punch in 2 + 2 on calculator, and punch in 2 + 2 on the other calculator, and one gives you 5 and one gives you 4, and you say this one's better because it's 5 and it's one more than 4. That's the wrong math. Yeah. It's a bad calculator, and that's not necessarily going to work. And the fact is, if you do the same thing, they're going to look the same. And that's really what is fundamentally correct about it. Now, let's just put that aside for a second. So therefore, if they're going to give you the same result, there's only two factor. Well, there's one factor, and it's called speed, that matters between the two. And that speed can be experienced in two different ways. One is the actual amount of time that the render works, obviously. Yeah. And the other one is how fast does it take to get to your final result using the render you want. So it's the user experience speed. Now, V-Ray, as we know, is an extremely fast renderer, right? And therefore can render really fast, which is why, you know, and some of our math is really fast, which is why the DMC sampler helps speed up Corona. But at the same time, Corona has a fantastic user experience that allows you to get to the final image much faster because it eliminates a lot of the variables that V-Ray exposes in some ways because it wants the flexibility.
Absolutely.
So so I'm curious about people's, like, it looks better in Corona. I'm wondering what it is that Corona does, because it has to do something mathematically speaking to change the result to make it look better, which it can do. It may be a post process of some kind or whatever. But I'm wondering what is it, because we've heard this before. What is it about a Corona image that quote unquote looks better?
Wow. Under pressure.
The lighting, I think, is somehow
And this is mainly true in the interiors.
This is us taking a straight scene. So you're taking a scene we've rendered in V-Ray before. Mm-hmm. So a job we've done, we've delivered, and we've been happy with the result. Mm-hmm. What we've, if I can summarize it quite simply, mm-hmm. we've taken the same scene, rendered it in Corona recently, and we've found that the output from Corona was closer to our end product than the V-Ray one was. We had to do less post-production.
Right. Mm.
And this is the same scene, taking the same
which is a post-production process. Yeah. So Corona does post-production process.
It's doing that for you. So you're not having to do that. But I think, personally...
But it does a good job of it.
It does a good job of it, yeah. But right. Whatever it is doing in that math
right.
is getting you closer to that end result. So in some respects, it's a bit like it's making it easier for an average artist to look a lot better, because I would have seen... One of our key skill sets is the post-production element. Why we'll be able to take our 3D renders and make them better. You know, one of Brett's skill sets and Chris's skill sets is really, really good work in Photoshop, and that's mm-hmm. knowing where it should go. So right. that process, but Corona kind of has almost taken not all of it, but a portion of that away right. by doing that post-production in what it shows in the renderer. And this is only from, you know, a removed point of view. I don't do any production, so right. I'm looking at this and what these guys are doing. So, but I get the feeling that was similar absolutely. To how you felt.
Just as simple as putting the just putting an environment dome in and just rendering simply from that the results of the light that we was pushing in through the windows, etc. We were finding we were just getting better results from the off. For interiors,
right?
Yeah. Mainly, we haven't tested it much Corona yet. I have to say on exteriors, but for right. interiors, we're finding we're getting much nicer bounce of color of light.
So you feel that there's a post process, but do you think that post process is very much tailored towards, let's say, interiors, where that interior is going to look richer because of the post process that's going on?
It felt like this. Yeah. It's felt like that over the last few weeks. Okay. Yes. I can't say much about exteriors at the moment because we haven't tested.
Sure,
much,
but let's say, you know, if you're going to do a big visual effect shot, that post process may not actually be tailor made for that, right?
Absolutely.
So something like V-Ray that, you know, hinges on many more markets, right? We're not necessarily as centered on visual effect. I mean, it's centered in ArcViz.
Yeah, yeah.
So the raw output has to be as neutral as possible so that you can do
what you want. Do your post-production, yeah.
So, which is interesting, like, you know, the way that I, and maybe, let me try to use this analogy. And maybe this is a good way to explain it. Cell phone cameras,
yep.
right? Okay, so cell phone cameras are, in terms of hardware, they're a teeny, teeny little chip, right? A CCD that's attached with a plastic lens in front on a shaky hand, et cetera, et cetera. And somehow these ridiculously small chips that have an enormous amount of megapixels, which means that every single pixel that's on the chip is really small and therefore doesn't pick up that much light, is producing beautiful images, right? Rivaling the images that are coming out of, you know, some SLR cameras or point and shoot cameras. The reason that it looks so good is because the image that's coming out of the CCD is only about 30% of the image. The other 70% is software implementation. Okay. So when an iPhone does something on that image, it's sharpening it or blurring it or enhancing the colors, degraining it, whatever they're doing to make that image look much, much richer. And therefore, it's, you know, it's Corona in a sense where you got an iPhone a render, right? Yeah. And so you're going to get an image that looks great where the average user can do that, but it doesn't necessarily always give you the flexibility. Not to say that that's a good or bad thing. Obviously, for you guys, it fits your persona and your market very well, right?
I think we haven't actively looked to do it. We've seen competitors in the market using it.
Sure.
They're getting good results. This, you know, we have to look at this because...
Of course you have to look at it.
There was no reason for us to leave V-Ray. It fits in our pipeline. No. It does a great job.
I'd do the same thing if I were you.
You know,
the images that we were producing in V-Ray and stuff still after post production were no way like behind the images that we've seen in Corona. We're just from speaking to people that have tried it.
Yeah,
have explained the process.
Yeah, and but I think what you just explained just is exactly how I felt about Corona. Is like there's something in there that's doing the work that we would do in post production.
Right.
You know, so you're getting to the point where we were going to render out Vero, which is very good, mm-hmm. but we need to pump the levels, you know, tweak the colors and do our Photoshop work, which made it look
like raw stuff. Right.
It's a raw stuff. We were like, why is that? Why is that business or that company suddenly producing renders like this?
Right.
When previously they were producing renders like that.
Right.
And we're like, we've got to look at this because previously that's one of our USPs was our post-production and what Chris and Brett and the guys do.
So you basically feel that Corona has reduced the amount that you have
in some way. My initial feeling was a little bit like that. It's like I guess it's the AI thing, isn't it? It's like a computer is starting to do that creative input to some degree.
Yeah, that's gonna happen. And,
you know, it's not worrying my initial reaction was like, that's a real reason why we can position ourselves at this position in the market because we're good at this. And a software product isn't doing that. You still need to be Chris or Brett or anything, you know, to input that mm-hmm. via Photoshop or whatever product that is.
Right.
And suddenly Corona was doing that bit.
Right.
So you were taking that element out of our process. So I don't say I'm terrified by it, but it's a little worrying in that Corona was able to do that with less individual experience, artistry. It was doing and I think you have explained it very well in terms of the software's doing that job.
Right.
And it's taking a chunk of the process mm-hmm. out of it to get to a quality image.
And it's only slight.
It's slight, but it's really important.
Of course. Mm. Yeah, it's the 99%, right?
Yeah.
So which is cool. So do you not feel so guilty about cheating on us now?
Mm. Yeah. we feel a lot less bad about cheating on you now. All right, it was like, this is easy, it's okay now.
Yeah. We were only trying it, I promise. We didn't cancel our licenses or anything like that.
It didn't mean anything, I was on vacation. Alright, well listen, we're coming up on an hour, and I just really want to thank you guys for doing this, because I think it'll be great to have this up and have your point of view on this whole process. I enjoyed your talk. I thought it was great, and I thought it would make some great content for our podcast and talk about that, because I think a lot of people are going to have those questions about their own work and when it's done and how they feel and how to react to clients. And don't get all pissed off when your client can't make a decision, because sometimes that turns into a beautiful relationship, right?
Absolutely. Well, that's part of our job.
Yeah.
That's it. That was the one job was the ideal.
Right.
And from a commercial perspective, the other job was saying, this happens all the time.
Right.
And, you know, we don't always get it right, but
it was stressful at times, but we now have a great relationship with that client through that process.
Yeah.
Brought us together, as you like, brought us closer.
Yeah,
that process. And fingers crossed. I mean, he did. He came back to us for the second set of images.
Right, and they're great.
And fingers crossed, he'll come back again for the next one.
And that's very much an Arc Media thing. Something that I've wanted us to always be is to have repeat clients. You know, I'd rather have 10 clients that come back for 10 years than 100 clients and only work with them once.
Right,
you know, there's an innate value that's not necessarily in pounds or dollars that you get from that, but your life and your
stress levels
are enormously better when you've got people you're working with that you like, you know,
right.
People by people. That's a simple, another philosophy that I like to
you know, stick it was with. Interesting. This is a fascinating thing. I do listen to a podcast, which inspired me to do this podcast. But one of them was, I was listening to guys from the Nerdist, and they happen to have the guy who does a reality show in the US called Bar Wars, right? So it's about you get a crappy bar and you hire this guy and he's going to turn your shit around or whatever, right? And so he's actually a very charismatic person and really funny, and just apparently I've never seen the show, but apparently he's always yelling at people and ripping things apart. But he had this amazing revelation on a podcast that I think it applies to all of us, and I think you'll agree. He said, when you have a bar, what you want in the bar is about no more than 60 or 70% regulars. And the reason you want that is that And you don't want too few regulars. Because if you have too few regulars, that means your bar isn't very good. People just come in the first time because they're attracted by what they see, and then they never come back. But if you have too many regulars, that means you're stale and you're not getting enough new business. And so it was a really good analogy. Really good analogy of having a bar, of how many regulars you have at that bar.
It's a very good point. You're absolutely right.
And I think that's basically what you're doing is obviously you started with a new customer, you became a new one, and you're going to have another experience down the line that's similar, or no, actually not similar, probably different.
And you know, some customers won't gel with you. You know, you work with a customer and you just find that you just doesn't, you can't. And that's the human element of it, in that, you know, you'll find that some people you can work with and they're brilliant, and that's why you want to extend that relationship and do more. And then there'll be ones that just don't work. You know, and you... None of that is really actually quantifiable. It's just, it happens, you know. Do you sit over a desk from one another and you have communication via email, via phone? And most stuff works. I think, you know, we're a fairly relaxed business, and we, you know, we try to help the clients. We don't force people into that structure as we were talking about before. And we want to be able to be flexible to do what's needed on the project. But you will find some people just, it doesn't work for them, and you've got to move on. So, you know, you've got to accept that not everyone is. Hopefully, that's only a very few people, but it does happen.
Yeah. Okay. So, where can people follow you? Where can they see all your stuff? You guys have obviously a website.
Yep, it's arc-media.co.uk.
Okay,
and we're on Instagram, Facebook.
We put quite a lot. As much as we can.
I'm sure Instagram is very popular. You guys are perfect for that, right?
It's great, especially because we have quite a few US clients and stuff now as well.
Okay, so Arc Media at Instagram.
What it is?
Just finding it on his phone.
I'm just checking.
You have to check your own.
Phone. Yeah, it's arcmedia_UK. So that's what we are.
Arc Media as one word.
It's ARC Media, no spaces. _UK. Okay. That's where you'll find our work. We post most of our projects as soon as we're allowed to release them. We produce them there, and we try to do a few little bits and pieces of. You know, R&D works as it's going along.
Cool. So go on, have a look, drop us some comments, let us know what you think.
Yeah, that sounds great. And we'll put those links up on the podcast page, and we'll hear more from you guys. Well, thanks so much, Ben and Brett. I really appreciate you being on this.
Great stuff. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.